Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Mr. Jared Coffey, Ag and Natural Resources Agent in Rockcastle County and farmer in Jackson County, Kentucky. This week, we will discuss extension equine programs in Kentucky, and as always, we will wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
David, how are you this week?
I'm pretty good. We could use a little bit of rain, but, you know, crops and wheat have come off pretty good. The crops are looking pretty good. Corn's starting to twist a little bit, so we could really use a rain. But other than that, things are going pretty good.
We got a little bit of a rain last Friday morning. If the rain we got was good where it happened, but it was a little sparse in places. And
yep.
I ended up with almost an inch, but there was a lot of places that didn't get near that much.
So. I had about 4/10 in my house, and I think in McLean County there was a place that had 5 inches. So drowned out some beans, So,
right. Yeah. I know one of the things that I think about right now, of course, our corn's a little bit late. We're late in the season for this. Mm-hmm. Everything getting planted, and the two things come to mind. One, this corn is going to be in a reproductive state before too long, and the temperatures are very hot. I think the temperatures at the time of pollination is probably one of the biggest variables that has a big, big effect on our final yield. But second of that is once this corn gets pollinated and starts making an ear, we're going to be at a time where we're usually in a drier season, and that's its largest requirement of water. Yep. is during that time. So we think a little bit of rain would probably help all of us. I know there's places, like I say, that's got some rain, but we could always use a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got a good little rain in Webster County, and the crops are looking pretty good. And as you mentioned, wheat harvest is moving right along, and there's a few wheat fields that's been burned off. You know how that happens this time of year, and so that's always a good one to get people's attention. So.
Yep.
If you're doing that, just be careful.
Yeah, a little rain never hurt anybody right now.
That's right.
I actually ended up harvesting a wheat plot for Vicki with a producer here the other day, and that was the first thing I thought of when I pulled in out of the edge of the field is all that stubble in this hot truck. And I was quick to pick out all the areas that had been mashed down low, and that's where I pulled over and parked just to try to prevent anything like that from happening. Yep. So. Well, we've got a guest with us this week, Mr. Jared Coffey. Jared's, outside of being a close personal friend, he's an extension agent with the rest of us. He's an agent in Rockcastle County and been in Whitley County. He's moved around a little bit, kind of gypsied from one county to another, you know. But and he lives in a completely different county where his farming operation is. So, Jared, welcome to the show. And tell us a little bit about yourself and about your farming operation.
Glad to be on today. Thanks, y'all, for inviting me on to talk today. Jay kind of touched on it a little bit. I'm started in Whitley County working for Extension. I transferred to Rockcastle County. I actually live in Laurel County. I have a farm there. Part of my family farms in Laurel, part of it's in Jackson County, which is where I was raised. So I've been here, there, and everywhere in that part of the state. So we run about 60 cow calf pairs. Got some quarter horses and some mules, and try to just kind of keep it all together, and we do some hay, and we don't have much grain where I'm at. That's kind of our ground is more rolling and hay ground, grass ground is what we've got. So
my wife and Gary would get along famously with the mule thing, because my wife has her mules, and she would get along with Gary well. They would enjoy one another's company, I would suspect.
I enjoy the mules. They're a lot of fun. I use them more for trail riding is what I use those
for. And they're different. They're different.
They are.
They
got
a different mind.
Very different.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're.
Now, I've always heard that they're, you know, to ride, they're smoother or more comfortable to ride. So is that true? Because I, you know, opposite of Garrett, I'm more of a grains girl. So I've heard that. So is there truth to that? Or
It depends on the mule. I will 100% say that I have heard that does go around, but a mule is very sure-footed. Most of them are, and they're going to move a little bit slower and pay a little bit more attention to what they're doing. But
a lot more attention.
They have a lot more attention, and most of them anyway. Yeah. And, you know, it's just like everything else. They all have their own personalities. Yeah. But
so if somebody's a little timid about horses, they might want to start on a good mule.
Good mule is a good thing.
you hit on there. You're right. If you want to start out, it needs to be something good.
Yeah,
a horse, mule, whatever you're riding, pony or whatever.
So. I had the chance to spend just a short part of an afternoon riding with Garrett one day, and rode his mule, and she's a good mule. At my age, if she's about like I like them, they got more woe than go.
That's it. You got it.
And that's an important thing, I think, for anybody. You know, depending on the terrain you're riding, the sure-footedness definitely is an attribute that mules have.
It
and they have a reputation for being stubborn. A lot of people talk about that like it's a bad thing, but one thing I've known about a mule, I had mules years ago, and typically you think of a mule, I think of an animal that's not going to hurt itself purpose.
That's exactly that's right.
And sometimes, you know, different people I've rode with, they may be better off that they's on a mule because of places they'd push them and that's things they try to make them do.
That's for sure.
So glad to have you this week. We're going to talk about our extension equine programs. And Garrett's had some real success with some programs he's done at different times. He and I served together on the State Equine Agents Working Group, and I've had a chance to hear about some of his equine programs. So, you know, tell us just a little bit about some of the programs you've done and how they've worked in your area.
I'm going to start off preface with that our extension is probably one of our best-kept secrets in the state, and the equine part of extension is probably even less known than any of the rest of it. So we have some really good specialists at the University of Kentucky, Dr. Bob Coleman and Dr. Fernanda Camargo. They both are very good. One's adult and one's 4-H. And so I've worked a lot with Dr. Coleman, and we've done some pretty good programs. We usually just kind of focus on the basics, really, is that, you know, most of the time he and I have talked a lot about in the horse world, we get into so much marketing that we get, and you know, it's something that somebody's trying to sell you, and most of the time that's what it really is. And so we kind of focus a lot on the basics of nutrition and foot care and, you know, tack fitment. And he is, he's got an extensive bit collection that he has. And we've talked a lot about bits. And so, you know, it's kind of, you know, what does this bit do and what does that bit do? And so we just kind of focus on a lot of the basics kind of stuff. We have done, like I said, some nutrition. We've talked about traveling with horses. We've talked about saddle fitment, what the bits do, and then just kind of something that's going to be really important this year is the hay issue that we're getting to, is that, you know, most of our horse owners that in the state, you know, outside of the central part of the state down in the bluegrass area, is that most people are going to have just 2, 3, 4 horses. And, you know, it's just kind of a hobby that they have, and it's not some kind of business. So most of those people are buying all their feed. And so, you know, focusing on getting the right amount of feed and what we have to have for those horses.
You know, I think that's a big part of a lot of the things that all agents could do, because there's horses in every county of the state.
There is.
And some agents, you know, may not have an extensive background in horses. Mm-hmm. I grew up with horses, but it's been a long time since I've really, really fooled with any horses to amount to anything. I think when you say we're the best-kept secret, we really are. Even the agents who don't necessarily have a strong equine background, they have access to the specialists. Okay. They have access to the publications, and there are a lot of things that we could be doing to help people. You mentioned nutrition. And you've heard me talk about it. That's one of the things that I feel like most horse owners could learn a lot about, is just basic feeding of that backyard horse.
There are undoubtedly is that it's one of two ways, is either they're not getting fed enough or they're getting overfed. And it's usually not in the middle. And we body condition score horses just like we do cattle, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10. And undoubtedly it's either too thin or it's way too fat.
Right.
And I get calls, and I've helped, you know, clients with both ways. And most of the time it's just for the simple fact of that, you know, they're just not knowledgeable about it. Or the other side is that they're getting their misinformation from Facebook.
Sure.
Google, you know.
Everything on Facebook and Google is – That's the way it is.
That's the way it is.
You know?
I mean, I know.
You got to believe everything you see on the internet.
And most people do. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so especially, you know, I'm on some Facebook groups, and this is something I did want to touch on today, is that, you know, you get on these Facebook groups and you start looking at, you know, somebody's asked a question about their horse and they've got 15 different answers.
Yep.
And some of them just, you know, make me want to pass out. I'm just like, did they really just tell that person to do that? You know, and so it's most of the time it is not the correct answer that we find on those places.
And you know, and that goes back to getting credible information from whatever source you're you know, and the great thing about Extension is we're an unbiased source of information, and we'll be glad to get you the right answer.
Yeah.
It may take us a minute, but at least it's the right answer. It's not an answer that we just pull out and you know.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of research that goes behind anything that comes out of at Land Grant University, the Extension Services, regardless of where you're listening from. And, you know, of course, we're in Kentucky, but if you're listening in Texas or wherever you are, it's you know that the information coming out from any of the Extension Services is research-based information. And I think that's key. We've talked about that before, is regardless of the information that you're looking for, make sure that it's a credible source.
Absolutely.
Because, as you said, Garrett, there's a lot of information out there that is just not just a little off. It's just completely incorrect.
Well,
you know it all. And we need to be aware of that.
That's exactly right. And this has been several years ago. I was actually agent in Callaway County, so a long, long time ago. I had a program, and I entitled it Feeding Someone Else's Horse. And the whole basis of that program was addressing the difference in the information that's out there. We have a lot of people who want to feed that horse in their backyard like it's a performance horse on a track somewhere.
Yep.
And that was my whole basis of that is feeding. You're not feeding your horse. You're putting together a diet for somebody else's horse, a horse you don't own.
And
that's where I feel like, you know, when we talk about vetting this information and making sure it's correct, there's correct information out there, but it's got to be applied to the situation that it was created for. We could talk about that with rations and horses just like we could rations in beef cattle versus dairy cattle. Mm-hmm. It's a very similar difference.
Well, and I think, too, it goes back to knowing what you're looking for, one, when you're getting into that. What are you going to do with that horse? And, I mean, I'll be the first one to say that I am not a horse person. I'm not a horse expert, and I'm not going to pretend to be, but when you're going in that arena, you need to know, what are you going to do with that? What do you want to do with that horse? And then make sure you get the right horse for what you're wanting to do, and then feed it the way it needs to be fed and so on like that. I think that's just something but a lot of times that is not the way it happens. We pick out something because we like the way it looks.
Yeah.
For somebody who claimed you don't know anything about horses,
she sure is chiming in.
That's a pretty smart answer.
So we have talked about doing a program. A couple of program ideas that we've thrown around is what is this my next horse? What horse am I going to buy? What is my first horse? You know, I don't have a horse. What am I going to buy? What do I need to buy? Not what am I going
to
buy?
And because what do I don't need to buy?
What you don't need to buy is very important. Yep. And so we talked about that, maybe doing a program on that matter. And then also doing a program that says, now I've bought a horse, now what?
Yep.
I bought it, now what do I do with it? You know, I mean, do I keep it in the barn locked up in a tight stall? Do I turn it out in the pasture? You know, I bought a show horse, but really all I want to do with it is trail ride it.
I've never owned a horse before, but I just bought a 3D barrel horse trail ride.
Right, exactly.
get ready.
Yeah. You can get there quick.
Yeah.
And every child at some time in their life wants a horse.
Oh, yep. Absolutely.
Yep. Oh, I still do.
And so sometimes, you know, horses get bought for that reason because their child wants one or something like that.
Yep. And I mean, you've got so many horses that are pasture ornaments.
Yep.
And feeding a pasture ornament and feeding a performance horse are two very different things. And those of us that trail ride just every now and then, those horses or mules or whatever are more pasture ornaments than,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, you're weekend folks. So you don't need to be feeding that trail horse that you're taking once a month to trail ride on a performance horse ration. I mean, it just doesn't need to happen. Yeah. So
a lot of horses get burned up. I mean,
The one, it causes lots of internal problems too.
Two things that I think of right off the hand are related to an equine ration. I think about a high protein feed, whether it's a pelleted feed or a sweet type feed. And I think of people who try to feed dairy quality alfalfa. Most horses do not need either one.
No.
And not only is it more expensive for you as an upkeep, but you're actually hard on that horse. If a horse isn't doing something with all that energy and all that protein, it's hard on kidneys. It's very detrimental to their insides.
Got a buddy that is a equine vet in Texas, and Vicky and Jay both know him. Garrett doesn't know him. Dr. Corey Payne, and he used to be an ag agent in Kentucky in Crittenden County, but he's an equine vet. And I asked him one time, I said, you know, how long can I expect these horses to last? And he said, well, it depends on what you feed them. He said, the more alfalfa, the more performance type horse feed you feed one, you know, they have a tendency to pass on a little quicker than one that's just fed kind of a maintenance diet, you know, so because you, and it's like Jay said, you just kind of burn them up. That's what happens. So.
Exactly right.
We get, I had a call just the other day about some laminitis issues. And I mean, after I started kind of really pushing her and questioning, I mean, she was feeding way too much, and it was causing laminitis problems.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, that is a very, very common thing.
The big three that I really think of with most horse owners, diet is certainly one of those.
It is.
Hoof care.
Yep.
Hoof care is another big deal that I feel a lot of people need to be not just cleaning feet on a regular basis, but working with a good quality farrier, making sure you're getting that horse shod for whatever you're going to do
with
it. We'd show a show horse differently than we would a trail horse.
For sure.
Yep.
And grow a different foot even, you know, completely different foot.
Yep.
So. Something else, that third thing, and you mentioned this a minute ago, it's something that I think we see a lot with horse owners. You mentioned bits and bridles. First of all, just having a bridle that's not fit correctly to that animal, I see as something that's a big, big thing. But when you mentioned bits and like Dr. Coleman and having an extensive bit collection, what most people need to understand about a bit, first and foremost, is that it's a tool. And there are different tools for different jobs to get what you want to, or to help encourage a horse to do certain things. And talk a little bit about bit fitting and bridle fitting.
So, you know, and it's going to be a lot of horse dependent. I mean, it depends on your horse. First and foremost is, you know, what works. I mean, I've got a horse that, you know, if you put the wrong bit in her mouth, man, she can't stand it, hates it. You know, if that bit, you know, I've always heard about one wrinkle, two wrinkle, three wrinkles in the cheek, you know, right here at the bit. Well, it's where do you ride your horse all the time? We can't ride at home every day with a loose bit, you know, it just sitting in her mouth. And then when you decide you're going to the show ring, you're going to pull that up and have three wrinkles in the corner of her mouth. Well, that doesn't work. And so, you know, making sure that you're fitting that bridle that makes it comfortable for the horse is primarily what we're looking for.
That's a safety factor almost
big time.
For the rider.
It is a big safety factor, absolutely. And so we can work, you know, me and Dr. Coleman have talked several times about, you know, just making sure before you ever step foot in the saddle is that your bridle fits right, the bit's in the mouth correctly, the saddle's sitting on right, the cinch is tight right, you know. Just check all the way back and look on both sides of the horse because, as we know, there's an onside and an offside for a horse, correct?
That's right.
Well, excuse me.
We know that.
So, you know, most of the time you're looking at the onside. You put the bridle on that side, you put the saddle on that side. Well, how many times do you ever walk around to the other side of your horse and look at it before you take off?
Absolutely.
Not much. So with the bits, I'm going to say that, you know, I think it's a marketing thing, once again. I could ride just about anything that I've ever ridden with a loose ring snaffle and get done what I need to do.
Sure.
I saw actually a quote from Buck Brannaman just recently that says the snaffle bit, and it was a branded snaffle bit, that he said that's the only tool you really need to ride a horse. And I agree with that 100% because it's, you know, you can get the job done because the job of the bit is a lot more to do with your hands sitting in the saddle. If you've got good hands, you can ride with any kind of bit. If you've got bad hands, you're going to hurt your horse with any kind of bit.
So speaking of that bit, let's back up just a little bit.
Sure.
For those out there that may just not know a lot about horses, what is the purpose of a bit?
So the purpose is it's a tool that used correctly is part of the way that you would control your horse. A horse that's trained correctly, that's been ridden correctly, you really don't have to use a bit a whole lot. You can ride, you really need to ride from your seat, and that's just part of the control is with your hand and with the bit. And so it goes in the horse's mouth. We want to try to keep them from running away with us. Some of them have a little tendency to do that once in a while. So yeah. It's a control method, really, is what it is.
If you've ever ridden a horse with a bit they did not like, you will not forget that anytime soon.
That's right.
It is.
And so I think a big misconception with bits are, the harshness of them. And I can assure you that I can break one's jaw with a loose ring snaffle the same as I can a straight 7-inch shank bit. Curb bit, however you want to talk about it. And so, it was really rider dependent. And, that's what really makes the difference.
And there's a gazillion bits.
Absolutely.
There really is. There's a bit. They've got
thousands.
A bit for everything, and there's thousands and thousands. Yeah. And, and that's the thing. You've got to figure out what works for your horse.
Yeah.
What works for you and kind of what works for the both of you, and try to work that, make that deal work would be a lot better than trying to say, well, I'm going to use this bit.
Right.
No matter what horse I'm riding.
And they're going to like it.
And they're going to like it. Then that doesn't work.
Well, for those people that don't know, like you were asking, Vicki, I like to think of a bit as part of the way that I'm communicating with my horse.
It is.
And just like we all need to be talked to differently or like things be presented to us a certain way, that bit in a horse's mouth, since it's a communication tool, it needs to be the tool that can best communicate what you want that horse to do. I remember my grandfather saying years ago, we start these colts with a loose snaffle. Why are we getting, going away from that as the colt progresses or as the horse gets older? And his thought was, is if you could work at any started colt with a loose snaffle, you ought to be able to do that from there on out. But he was a horseman, and he worked with foot cues and knee cues and being able to communicate with that horse a lot of ways other than just the bit. The bit should be part of the way that we communicate with our horse.
It is, for sure. And so, you have to think about that, and it's just, it goes back to what David mentioned. It's what works for your horse. And, there's tons of them, but I will say is I have ridden a lot of horses with a loose ring snaffle bit. You can buy them anywhere from $25 to $400 or $500, depends on what kind of you're looking for, what suits you. Obviously, you're going to get the handmade quality for the, the higher dollar ones, and the other ones are going to be mass produced, but they'll all work. And, I will also say that for myself riding a horse is that I can use a loose ring snaffle and I can communicate a little harder in the mouth than a 100-pound woman can, And so my wife, she rides, I use more of a shank style curb bit when she's riding because she could pull as hard as she could and it's not going to send that cue like I'm going to send just with the touch, So it's a lot dependent on who's riding even.
And probably, I guess I'm going to just guess on this, but it may depend upon the calmness of the person that's riding horse, too, because, like I'd mentioned, I've not ridden a lot of horses, but, my grandfather told me a long time ago, I can promise you, if you're scared, they know it.
Yep.
They're going to sense that really quick, and they're going to react to you differently than they're going to react to somebody else because you're nervous, you're stiff, you're jumpy and jittery, and so the horse is going to respond to that. I'm sure too.
So to quote Yellowstone, you know, everybody loves to watch Yellowstone, yes. Right? I mean, everybody loves that show. But one of the quotes that I picked up from it is one of the guys in it. I can't remember which one said it now, but he said a horse can feel a fly light on its back. So that tells you every twitch, every move. And sometimes you're telling a horse something by accident,
mm-hmm.
yep. You know, especially a horse like I've got a quarter horse that we work cattle with. And so a lot of times, you know, I'm using my knees and my feet and my legs and my seat to cue that horse. Well, then Vicky gets on it, and she's not used to that. Well, she's telling that horse to do something, and she doesn't even realize it because she's sending a cue with pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so, you know.
Heard it said many, many years ago that as much time should be spent training riders as it is yep. training horses.
That's a fact.
Yep. And yep. That's something that I've seen for years. And I know I've had times when I was working in the show horse industry and working horses in the evenings after work, there'd be days when I'd be on, and everything mm-hmm. would be right,
yep.
and the horse would be right.
Yeah.
A lot of those days, if a horse wasn't right, it's because I wasn't right.
That's most of the time.
And, it's just like working a dog or anything else. You might all just put it in the stall and come back another day and start over.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you done any type of programming or thought about doing any programming on just safety? You know, just safety around a horse? Or, you know, we know that around any livestock, you know, that safety should be at the top of the list.
For sure.
For the animal and for the person that's handling them. But, you know, with horses, you know, there's just a lot of people that really, they dislike horses, and but they may just not know enough about them and can get hurt in a hurry. And so, you know, what programs have you done or intend to do on that?
So it kind of comes back to the same thing we were discussing a minute ago, is, you know, making sure that your tack's fitting right, making sure that it's in good shape. You don't want to use a saddle that's got a broke cinch, you know, that's got rotten leather on it. Your bridle needs to be in, you know, well old condition, you know, nothing that's dry rotted, that kind of thing, because you talk about a safety issue is going down the trail and the saddle falls to the side, you know, the bit falls out of the mouth. And so, you know, that's a big safety concern. And also something that we have discussed and actually had a program on is we called it traveling with horses. And I will say is that if you want to get into a deep subject, we could talk about that. There's tons of opinions, and you know, but setting your trailer upright, having the safe trailer to haul them in, you know, how far can we haul them? How hot can it be when we haul them? I mean, we're sitting here today, it's 94 or 5 degrees outside. It's a terrible day to transport horses.
Right.
I mean, they're going to get dehydrated and that kind of stuff. So being, you know, keeping you safe as the rider, but also keeping the horse safe.
It's interesting what you said too, because when you think of safety, you know, I think about safety of how to approach the horse.
Yeah.
You know, what, you know, how to, you know, not walking up behind it too quick or being loud.
Yeah.
But not thinking about the safety part of the things that you were talking about with the saddle. You know, just like the raw, you know, the rough leather, worn out leather, you know, that's just something that, you know, I wouldn't have thought about either. So that's very interesting that there's a whole lot more to safety than just knowing how to approach it.
Yeah. And it goes back kind of too with we were talking about earlier about what horse to buy. And I'm not going to really express many opinions on this one way or the other, but we see a lot of rescue horses, a lot of the adoption horses and that kind of stuff. And my problem with that is that I'm not saying that we want to keep that horse safe that is going to your farm. We need to make sure if you're adopting a wild Mustang, I mean, those facilities have to be a lot different than if I'm buying one of my horses, you know, that's taken to your place. Yep. And so my thing is that I want to make sure and keep that horse safe when it goes to your place. And so, you know, I think that it's very important that before you start as a safety issue, is that am I going to be able to handle this horse, you know, to keep you safe and the horse safe?
You definitely got to have the facilities to handle them. And I mean, you know, they need basic things like shade.
Yes.
They need basic things like, you know, fresh, clean water and those type things.
Yep.
But, you know, those are just some basic things that you got to have to keep them safe and to keep the riders safe.
Yep.
They got to have the right equipment.
Mm-hmm.
They got to have a correctly fitting saddle, and some of those things. And a lot of folks don't know how to do that, Garrett.
Yeah.
I mean, they just
That's
don't know
sure.
if it fits or if it doesn't fit. They just throw it up there and cinch it up and
hope for
let's
the best.
Ride.
And we get so much marketing in the horse industry it is sold as, you know, I mean, there's treeless saddles, there's custom fit saddles, there's padded saddles, and I mean, the list goes on and
deep
on and on.
Deep seat saddles.
And I mean, it's a marketing, it's someone trying to sell you something. So, you know, before you go and buy this big, you know, treeless saddle that fits one specific horse, you know, let's do some research on that to make sure that that's what we need, you know.
Yep. Gary, let me ask you a question, and I see this on the internet all the time, and I'm on some of those Facebook things like you are, but, you know, you talk about there's saddles, there's horse saddles, and there's mule saddles. You know, what do you think there is a difference? Can you, you know, and of course I know it all depends on the animal, and some mules have withers, some do not. So, you know, what about the mule saddle versus the horse saddle, you know, that kind of thing? What's your thoughts on that?
So I will say that, first of all, is that a good saddle pad is really good place to start. And also, you know, there's tons and tons of different kinds of saddles out there, and try to get something that fits. You know, I mean, if you've got a little narrow withered mule, then a wide quarter horse bar saddle is not going to work. I mean, it's just not.
Full quarter horse bar.
Yeah, I mean.
Need more like a three-quarter bars to sit
up.
Yeah,
and so, you know, there's tons of different pitches and bars in those saddle trees. And you know, trying to find something that fits is probably better than having a custom fit, because if you have a custom fit, you know what it fits? That horse.
That horse.
Yep, that's it.
Yep. And so, you know, and I feel like a lot of times it's a lot of marketing in that. So, you know, and just trying to find something. And I mean, I'll tell you the truth is I've probably owned 20 saddles in the last 15 years. And I've gone through a bunch of different ones and trying to find something, and some of them fit, some of them work good, and some of them don't. You know, there's just so many different options out there, and trying to find something that one fits you and two fits the horse.
Well, that's my wife has two mules. One of them is built like a horse.
Yep.
The other one is built like a barrel,
mm-hmm.
a 55-gallon barrel.
Yeah.
And I don't care what you throw up on her, it's going to fit, but it's going to slide off one side or the other, however you want, whichever side you want to get on. So
nothing to hold it in place.
No, she doesn't have any withers, you know, mm-hmm. none at all. So, I mean, that's the thing you combat, I think, sometimes with mules is that you know, one is way a lot different from the other, and having several different saddles, and we've got a tack room full of saddles that some fit them and some
every
don't.
Good horse owner does.
Yeah, you know, I know it is. Right.
And to go along with that, especially for the mule, that folks need to know whether or not they need like a breeching, whether or not they need a good breast collar.
Yeah.
I think they do. You know, whether the mule necessarily needs it or not, there's going to be a time when you wish you had it, especially trail riding in rougher terrain.
So that's definitely, you know, if I'm going to Wyoming to ride in the Bighorn Mountains, you know, we get out there, then I'm going to have breast collars and breechins, and you know, I mean, it's going to be strapped on.
Up and down hills is a lot different than just riding the flat ground.
And you know, in my country is a lot different than being in David's country. You know, so we're going up and down a lot, and I'm going to have a breechin on my mule, even if I'm just riding up to check the cows in the afternoon, because you know, but.
Yep.
Sometimes we don't, but most of the time, if we go out, we're going to use a breeching. I'll speak just a little bit about the breeching and the croupers. I don't really particularly care for croupers. It puts pressure on the backbones in the wrong place, and so a breeching is a lot better option for a mule. And some people even use them on horses if you've got a mutton withered horse riding in rough country.
I will say this,
did you catch that mutton withered?
I did. I was catching every bit of it.
Did you understand what that was?
I caught every bit of it.
Not mutton busting.
We're
going to stay out of the rodeo world.
I was thinking, did he say britches? No, all kidding aside, though, just listening to you all talk. You know, before you get in the horse business, or any business, really, but today we're talking about horses, you really need to do your research, not only on what kind of horse you want, but are you going to make the commitment that you need to make? Because it's not just about buying the horse.
That's right.
You can get the horse, that's probably the easy part, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't, not always. I guess it depends on what kind of horse you're looking for and how much money you got to spend and all of that. But there's so much more to it than buying the horse. And you're not doing yourself any favors, and you're certainly not doing that horse any favors if you're not going to follow through with the commitment of what it needs, you know, to be able to, if, whether it's a pleasure horse or whether it's a working horse or what the purpose of that horse is. Just know you're going to be in it for the commitment, because if not, you may be stuck with a lot of money spent. And
one thing I've been wanting to work on is, especially with increasing hay cost and increasing feed cost, is just a yearly breakdown of what it costs to keep a horse for 1 year. I've seen, and I'm like, David, I don't want to, because I'm afraid of what it would look like for me. But, you know, we get to talking about what that's going to cost to just keep a horse, you know, keep shoes on them, vet work, feed. I mean, some of the feed that I'm feeding some brood mares, I mean, we're talking that stuff's $30 a 50-pound bag, you know. You start feeding good quality square-baled hay, not even alfalfa, and you're going to get into $8-$10 a square bale. Just for good orchard grass fescue mixed hay.
There again, you mentioned feeding a brood mare. That's not every backyard horse, and they require a different ration.
Yeah, certainly. For sure.
And the time, just the time, because you need to spend time with that horse once you buy it and get it on your farm or in your backyard, wherever you're going to put this horse. You're going to have to spend some time with it.
Yeah. I heard Dr. Wood say yesterday that he rode every day.
I heard him say that.
Yeah, and he said he rides every day. And, I mean, if you want good horses, I can assure you is that you've got to ride them every day.
And that's going to make you a better horse owner.
Yes.
Well, it's we were talking earlier about communicating. Every day that you ride a horse, you're communicating with that horse. And the more you do it, the more not only is the horse going to understand you, but you're going to understand the horse.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
If you want to, you just want to go trail ride once a month or something, you don't need to spend $10,000 on a horse or mule or whatever to go trail ride once a month. You know, buy a horse accordingly to what you're going to use it for.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm guilty of it myself. I mean, I love watching these reining horses.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, it's just amazing what they can do. These cutting horses, you know. Yep. I love watching them in these competitions, but I'm never going to compete with one of those horses. I'm going trail ride, and I'm going to work my own cattle with them. And so, you know, to watch those horses, I mean, I want one, but, you know, what am I going to do with it?
You don't need a Colonel Freckles bloodline necessarily to work a few cows and trail ride.
You know, what am I going to do with it sitting there at the house? You know, that's kind of funny to think about. I'd love to have one, but, you know, so I have to realistically look at what I want even, you know. I mean, I've been in the business for 25 years, and I have to continuously think, you know, I mean, I don't need that, you know.
Yep.
All right.
I get, too, with livestock or humans, either one, sometimes we're going to get sick. Sometimes the horses are going to have to be treated. They're going to get sick or they're going to get injured, you know, and so there's the aspect of the medical side of that. So
there's gremlins that come out about once a month, and only horses can see them, and so they get injured a lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that what you call them, gremlins? Yeah, my grandfather called them boogers.
Yeah, right.
She's seen a booger.
Yeah. Yeah, so
there's a lot of boogers out there. That is correct. And so, you know, I mean, and they do. A horse is a you know, a prey animal, and so they do see a lot of boogers. And I, you know, they get scared, they're going to run, they're going to get hurt, they're going to step in holes, they're going to run into stuff. And, I mean, you know, you think you've seen it all, just hang around a little while, and you'll be like, how did that happen?
Yep.
And, you know.
Yeah,
I agree with that 100%.
We could probably record a whole podcast on horse wrecks.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, you know, you mentioned there talking about the type of horse you need for this and that. I made a comment here the other day. You actually come to mind, Garrett. I made a comment there at the house. I said, you know, I need me another horse. And my wife said, no, what you need is a good friend with a horse.
That's kind of like a boat.
That's right.
She is not a livestock person. She grew up on a dairy farm, but that's kind of part of our nuptials is that I would not have livestock around for her to take care of.
Right.
She knows I'm gone a lot, and she knows what happens with, if you got an animal and you got a fence, sometime or another you're going to have an animal on the road. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens.
Good stuff. Well, we always try to wrap things up with a timely tip, and we were going to leave that to you to bring to us today. So what would you like to tell our listening audience?
So we were talking about some nutrition stuff, and I think the timely tip is for horse owners at this point in our year is that our hay crop is very uncertain at this point. And so we need to be thinking about how much hay is it going to take for us to get through the winter. And so we need to be buying that right now, because I mentioned, you know, $8-$10 a square bale. I mean, we could be looking at $15 a square bale, you know, $75 a roll bale or more. And so we need to think about our horse. And so with a horse is you need to plan on about 2.5% of their body weight per day. So if you have a 1,000-pound horse, that's 25 pounds of hay a day that you need to plan on having in the barn. And I mean, at this point, my recommendation for every horse owner is to be putting the hay in the barn right now. Do not wait another 2 months. You know, don't wait until November, whenever the pasture's gone, to be looking for hay, because it is going to cost you a lot more if you can even find it.
You know, and that's something we haven't talked about a lot, but if you're in the, or any really, I don't guess in this show, but if you're in the hay buying business, you really should have a good relationship with that person you buy hay from, just like a good vet relationship.
Absolutely.
It's not, when you're feeding any kind of animal, it's not about shopping around to find the cheapest. It should be about finding the hay that you need for your particular animal, not feeding somebody else that you're feeding yours. And make sure you've got that person that's going to help you keep that good hay in stock.
And so, you know, with the hay purchase is that our horses, absolutely, they are grazers. And so they have to have that fiber from that grass and that hay in order to survive. We cannot, you know, we can't just feed them corn or soybeans or just any kind of grain and then get by. They have to have that roughage in order to digest and to keep them alive. So hay is very important, and it's going to be an issue for us this fall.
Absolutely. Of course, people may listen to this show on out into the future and not really know what we're talking about, but it's 2022. We've had a really, really long spring, wet, a dark, cloudy spring. Fertilizer prices being what they are, a lot of hay didn't get fertilized this spring like it might have in a normal year. So most people that I've talked to, their first cutting was a little short.
Yeah.
I've tested a lot of hay already. It's some pretty good quality hay because of the time it was. We had a little window where folks could get on it early.
Yeah.
And we've got some good quality hay, but I think it is going to be thin all across our state. Yeah. So. Well, Garrett, we appreciate you being here with us today.
Glad to be on.
Want to thank him for being a part of the show and bringing us some information. This is the first time we've done one on horses, but I think we can look forward to doing another one at some point.
Sure.
So
absolutely.
Thank our host for putting this together and the information. And we want to thank our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag Matters.